Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's time to get the sweaters out of summer storage and lay the quilts back onto your beds. We celebrate fall with a new book from Mary Reese Fitzgerald. It looks at South Dakota quilts and quilt makers. She joins us now from inside the Black Hills Surgical Hospital Studio in SDPB's Black Hills Bureau. Mary Fitzgerald, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you.
It is a beautiful book. It is a hardcover book, full color, coffee table book. Tell me a little bit about how this project and the book began.
Well, that's a long time ago, isn't it? I have always been interested in sewing as an art by itself. And then my mother, bless her heart, decided that I should know how to quilt, too, about the bicentennial time. And so I started quilting, and it brought me to the point where I thought, there's more to history here than we're giving credit for. Mm-hmm. I belong to the American Quilt Study Group that studies history of textiles, particularly in the United States, but worldwide. And that inspired me to go forward and work on the quilt documentation of South Dakota.
When do you remember making that connection between just really the beauty and the artistry of the quilt to really think about the history, specifically the history of women and quilt making?
I think that history has been one of my passions forever, as long as textiles have been. So I think it was kind of a natural marriage that I could see. For instance, on samplers, you see this name. Who is this name? Is this actually a person, or is it just a name? So I needed to make the connection with the actual person.
And I was reading through the introduction and the forward front matter of the book, talking about the documentation process and how sometimes people would bring a quilt in and not realize that that name was somewhere present on the quilt and discover it through this process. Tell me what that is like, and where should people look for that kind of signature on a quilt?
Well, some of them are really obvious, and I remember one particular. She was telling me how her children had used it all through grade school and through college, and they loved this quilt, and they didn't know much more about it. And I turned it over, and there was the signature of the maker on the backside. They were enjoying the warmth and the beauty, and, you know, you don't look deeply at things sometimes. Another one is that sometimes the embroidered names or dates are buried within the context of the quilt itself, and you have to really be looking for them. There's a particular one that I found that had the names of the maker and the sister and dates in the quilting itself. Mm. So when you use cursive and you try to quilt around it in like a half inch size, it's really difficult to read. And so you look for anomalies in the quilting that don't fit the rest of the pattern. And then you can work out what it says to some degree. You can't figure out all of the letters. A's and O's look a lot alike.
Right. My grandmother taught me when you do this kind of work, you must sign it somewhere. That was a big thing for her.
Bless her heart. She's right.
She quilted, she needlepointed, she hooked rugs. And that was one of the things she passed down. She's like, you're going to wish that you had put your initials on there somewhere in the future. Fascinating.
And maybe the date.
Yes,
you might
and the date.
Know, when did I do this?
Yes, she always did. Looking through the book, and the first the quilt that I opened up to is the same pattern of the quilt that hangs on my wall on a quilt rack, and it's called Wig Rose or Conventional Rose. How popular was that sort of pattern?
It was fairly popular among the wealthier people. Of course, it took more wealth to make a pattern like that because we're talking applique, right. And it's kind of a waste of fabric to put perfectly good fabric over perfectly good fabric. So you had to have some kind of wealth to allow for that. In the East, it was fairly popular. There are a number of different patterns along that line with different names. And I am thrilled to hear that you have a wig rose. That is wonderful.
This was on my grandmother's bed until the day that she died. And now I have a dog, so it's not on my bed.
Oh,
because
good.
The dog often is, alas. So it's hanging. Tell me some ideas of, can you look at something like that and figure out how old the quilt is by looking at it? When people brought their quilts in, is it the pattern? Is it the fabric itself? How do you date something?
It's a combination of those two. Plus, if they have some idea who made it and when they died, when they were born, it gives us a context. But the fabric print is the one thing that we can be most sure about. Sometimes they didn't have stashes like we had, you know, I bought a batik in 2000 and it's still in my stash. They pretty much used things up as they went along. So if there was anything left over, it was very small pieces. The exception to that might be early on, women wore quilted petticoats. And, you know, they were the petticoats that the dress was open in the front. It was a sort of a chemise, so the petticoat showed. Well, when the rest of the garment would wear out, they'd take that quilted piece and incorporate that or recycle into something else. So there are these petticoat pieces that are in quilts. So that kind of throws you off. We don't have textiles quite that old out here in South Dakota unless they were brought with them. The earliest one I saw was 1782, I think. Wow. Then the next one was like 1810. So it's unusual to find the really old ones.
So when I looked at, you know, down at the book and then up at my wall, and I realized that's the pattern that I'm looking at. But there are definitely differences in how the quilter interpreted the pattern versus the one you have in the book. Do they have, like we would today, you know, a kit or a, you know, this is how you make this pattern sort of passed down, or would they look at things and interpret them themselves?
They didn't have patterns or books or instructions like we have now. I remember reading some time ago, a woman was walking down the street and she saw a crochet pattern she liked on another woman's dress. So she followed her and she said she was stealing it with her eyes. And I think that that is a good way of putting how women found these patterns. I think I have said before, you can give a woman a pattern, but you can't make her follow it. she is going to interpret it her own way. So if they saw this lovely wig pattern, they get home and they will forget what the turn of the stem was or how big the flower was or the exact color. So it becomes her interpretation. And since there weren't patterns, you stole with your eyes, you interpreted it in your own way.
What are your hopes for this book? I mean, the project itself of documenting these quilts is ongoing. The book is something that would sit on a person's shelf and be used and opened and flipped through and shared for generations itself. What did you have an awareness as you did this project that, you know, what you were doing was not only capturing all these moments in history, but would last for the future and sort of move the narrative forward?
Not until you just said that, but I really, that makes me feel good.
I'm sort of in awe as I look through it. For people who are still, you know, creating fiber arts in the state, it also sort of elevates it to its rightful position to say that this matters.
I agree with you entirely. I think one of the things that I noticed as I was going along, there are a lot of pieces of information I recorded, and I only researched five at the end of the book and compared them, like the number of piece quilts as opposed to applique and so on. But there's a lot of good information in there, and I am going to donate that so that it will be available to anyone who wants to research it, look at other questions in there, nationalities, ethnicities, types of patterns, whatever they want. So it'll be available for other people. And I think that's important that we share what we have instead of holding it close to us and lose it.
That was something else my grandmother taught. Share your recipes.
Yes.
She said, share the recipes, yeah.
They can't all make them right anyway.
That's exactly what she would say. And she would have people who would give her a recipe and then she would make it. They maybe left an ingredient out and that irritated her. She was like, no, share the whole thing. This is sort of how we do it. Lessons from my grandmother from all these years.
That's wonderful.
Mary, let's close with one more story of an interesting quilt or an interesting experience, something in the book. And if you're just tuning in, the book is called South Dakota Quilts and Quilt Makers. One more story, Mary, and then I'll tell people about the documentary and some of the book signings.
Oh, my. There's so many stories. There's this quilt in there that was made from the muslin cigarette bags. Mm-hmm. I collected that documentation up at Mobridge. And it was so interesting because this woman who brought it was bringing the work of her aunt. And all of these little 5-inch square pieces of muslin bags that are left from loose tobacco is what she made the quilt from. She made at least three quilts like that. She had her father and her uncles, or her grandfather and her uncles, smoked. She said she never saw them without a cigarette in their mouth. So I don't know how many bags there would have been in these three quilts, but just think about that monumental task, not only of making sure those men gave her those sacks every time, she took them apart and put them back together, cut them and put them back together as quilts. I just think that's amazing.
That's remarkable. And maybe it's an unexpected benefit that you might know, but immediately as I was reading this and looking at the quilt, my grandmother's gone. I reached up and I called my aunt, and we had a lovely conversation. I thought, well, that's another unexpected perk of this book, is those conversations that mostly women, some men, but women are going to have with the folks who came before us.
And I say to them, talk to your parents or grandparents now about, is there a quilt in this house I should know about, and what's its story?
Right. Mary Fitzgerald, there are special screenings of SDPB's new quilting documentary called Points of Pride, Quilts of South Dakota, and author book signings, the next one Saturday, September 23rd at 2 p.m. Mountain Time at the South Dakota Festival of Books. You can meet Mary at the Martin and Mason Hotel in Deadwood. Saturday, September 30th, she'll be at the Community Center in Burke. Mary Fitzgerald, thank you so much. It's a lovely book, and we'll have you back on the show as we talk more about the documentary in the future.
Thank you.